Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Catholic Singles. Every day, hundreds of Catholic singles join CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love. Breadbox Media listeners get 20% off by using the promo code BREADBOX when they register. Come be our next success story at CatholicSingles.com. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Who are the Essenes and how are they connected to the Dead Sea Scrolls? Next with Jimmy Akin. And don't forget to stay all the way to the very end. There's a surprise coming up. Hello and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we're joined again by Jimmy Akin, the author of The Bible is a Catholic Book, among many other books, and senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. And we're in the midst of a conversation, or several conversations, about groups who were influential in the Jewish world that Jesus operated in at the time of Jesus. This time, Jimmy, the Essenes, and I have a problem with the Essenes.
What's your problem?
Where are they in the New Testament? I can't find them.
They're not. They're not mentioned, at least by name.
Okay.
They're not mentioned in the New Testament. So they're much less known than to most Christians than the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They are mentioned, though, in a variety of historical sources. Josephus, the Jewish historian from the late first century, talks about them. So does Philo, the Jewish philosopher from Alexandria, who lived in the first century BC and the first century AD. He was a contemporary of Jesus.
Okay.
Josephus lived just after Jesus. He was born in AD 37. They're also mentioned by the Roman naturalist Pliny the Elder.
Okay.
Who died when he got too close to the exploding Mount Vesuvius because he was so curious about it.
He's like a cat.
It's like curiosity killed the naturalist.
Roman naturalist.
Yeah. But he wrote a book called Natural History, which talks about all different places in the known earth, including the places the Essenes lived.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had these early literary sources that talked about them. We knew a little bit about them. We knew some of their beliefs. But in the 20th century, we found a huge cache of writings at the Dead Sea, known as the Dead Sea Scrolls, that most scholars think was an Essene library.
Okay.
And this has, and if that's correct, then we now know much, much, much more about the Essenes than was known before the 20th century.
So, first of all, let me just ask you about an ancient library then. What was it written on? Is it scrolls?
Yes.
Is it a bunch of scrolls?
Yeah. All books in the ancient world, I mean, with very few exceptions, were scrolls. It was actually the Christian movement that started popularizing the modern form of the book that has the square spine where you can flip through the pages instead of having to roll through them.
Yeah.
That was us. We did that. But everybody else in the ancient world, they used scrolls. And so the Dead Sea Scrolls were scrolls. And that meant they were written on, most of them were written on either papyrus, which was made from a reed that comes from Egypt, or vellum, or a parchment, which is an animal skin.
Okay.
And you can go see them. They have a traveling exhibit that's come that travels around the world to different museums.
Wow.
And they're really tiny. That was one of the things that struck me, is they're very small. And they really, you can tell how expensive the writing materials were because the writing on them is super small. They're really trying to conserve space to keep costs down.
So they're... we don't see them in the New Testament, as you said. There's no direct reference to them. They're not named.
They're not named. And we don't even, we're not even really sure what their name means.
Okay.
There have been a bunch of proposals, but none of them has really won out. It may be related to a word for like the righteous, not the same word that the Sadducees had, but it may be related to that, but it may not be.
So then do we think that there's any interaction between these Essenes and Jesus himself or early Christianity? And also, is there any way in which that library sheds light on the time of Jesus that we might not have had before?
Yes.
Okay.
But let's save that.
Okay. All
right. Let's talk about the movement itself before we integrate it with what it may shed on Christianity.
Okay, fair enough. So who are these people? What are they doing?
Well, the movement seems to have started a little more than 100 years before the time of Jesus. We can't tell for sure. But one of the reasons we can't tell some of this for sure is because the authors of the Dead Sea Scrolls like to write in code. And this was something people did at times. Like, you know how in 1 Peter, when Peter is writing from Rome, he refers to Rome as Babylon.
Yeah. So right. Okay.
Well,
right.
The authors of the Dead Sea Scrolls did something similar. So whenever they have a reference to the Romans, they'll refer to them as the Kittim, which is a term that actually is from the Old Testament, and it doesn't mean Romans. It's more like Chaldeans or something.
Right.
And but they'll use these same kind of Old Testament things to refer to modern people. And then they refer to key individuals without giving their names. We know that one of the most important people in the Dead Sea Scroll community was a man named the Teacher of Righteousness. The Teacher of Righteousness. That's how they refer to him. He's their, not exactly their founder, but he's their big early leader that shaped their movement.
Okay.
The Teacher of Righteousness. But they never name him.
Oh.
So, you know, that deprives him of a little bit of context. However, they indicate that he was persecuted by an individual they refer to as the Wicked Priest. And there's also another guy called the Spouter of Lies.
Man, they were good at titles.
Yeah. but we're not sure exactly who the Teacher of Righteousness or the Wicked Priest or the Spouter of Lies was.
Right.
And so this gets debated. Now we have most scholars think we know who the Wicked Priest is. It has to be a high priest, because he's in charge of stuff. And the high priest was the ruler of Israel at the time, during the time of the Maccabees or the Hasmoneans. So the Wicked Priest seems to be a high priest that was ruling Judah at the time and that did not like the early Essene community. And so he persecuted and tried to kill the Teacher of Righteousness, but he failed. And based on various factors, most scholars think that the Wicked Priest is a Hasmonean ruler named John Hyrcanus.
Oh.
John Hyrcanus was high priest and ruler from about 130 BC to about 104 BC.
Mm-hmm.
So in the last 30 years of the second century BC. And so that seems to be approximately when the Teacher of Righteousness lived, was during that period. Now, I mentioned the Teacher of Righteousness is not actually the founder of the group. We have indications that say that the Teacher of Righteousness became the leader of the group after it had been around for about 20 years. So it talks about how there's stuff happening that caused the Essene, or the sectarians, as they're sometimes called, the Dead Sea sect, to separate themselves from the temple in Jerusalem. They believed that the temple had been corrupted. And among the other things that were corrupting it were a variety of practices. Now, we've talked in our previous episodes about how the big debates where the rubber meets the road in this period in Judaism were not theological.
Right.
There were theological differences, but that wasn't what got people to break with each other. What really got them to break with each other was differences about ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so early, it looks like early on in their history, there was a group of people who became very dissatisfied with what was happening at the temple. And they wrote a letter, which we have multiple copies of from the Dead Sea Scrolls. So this is a very important letter, or we wouldn't have multiple copies. It's sometimes called 4QMMT, which is a reference to the cave it was found in. It's sometimes called the Halachic Letter. But what it deals with is, here are all of the rules that you guys are breaking at the temple.
Uh-huh.
And it names a bunch of different matters of legal interpretation that it says, you guys are doing it wrong, and here's what you need to do instead, and this is why we've had to separate ourselves from you. And then at the end, it switches from talking in the plural to the people at the temple, which would be all of the priests,
yes,
to talking in the singular to one guy.
Mm-hmm.
Says, you, and it says, you know how when kings like David and Solomon followed God's will, it went well for them.
Yeah.
But when they disobeyed God's will, it didn't go well for them. So you need to do all the stuff we just said.
Right.
And they're talking to him as if he's the king. And that would point to one of the Maccabean high priest rulers. Mm-hmm. And so it looks like this letter was like at the founding of their movement, and they're writing to the wicked priest or his predecessor in hopes of repairing the damage, mm-hmm, that caused them to separate. But then the letter didn't have its effect, and it looks like about 20 years went by, because it says the men of the community like were wandering for 20 years before they found the great leader, the teacher of righteousness, who really whipped the movement into shape. And so it looks like the teacher of righteousness lived in the time of John Hyrcanus, and the movement itself started about 20 years before the time of the teacher of righteousness becoming the leader. So it's about in the John Hyrcanus time frame.
Okay. So when you say they separated themselves, and so they do they end up down near the Dead Sea? Like, how far is that from Jerusalem? Where did they end up?
The Dead Sea is not very far south of Jerusalem. I mean, nothing in Israel is very far from anything in Israel.
Okay. Yeah.
The whole country is like 100 miles from end to end. So it's actually the Dead Sea. Jerusalem is in the south, which is where the Dead Sea is. Jerusalem's a little bit north of the Dead Sea, and there's a site at the Dead Sea called Herbet Qumran, and that site has the ruins of some buildings there that a group used, and we think it was basically like a monastery. It was their kind of desert retreat. There's also a cemetery there. So we have the bodies, we know how many people lived there, and it wasn't that many.
Okay.
There was only between like 100 and 200 people there. We know from Josephus, though, and from these other sources, that the Essene movement was quite a lot bigger than that. Josephus says there were about 4,000 Essenes.
So maybe this was one particular?
This was a particular place. It's, mm-hmm, also the one that's mentioned by Pliny the Elder.
Okay.
He knows about this place. So this may have been kind of like their special desert commune monastery, but they lived other places too. In fact, there's a gate in Jerusalem called the Essene Gate. So there seems to have been a community of Essenes in Jerusalem. And so they were living around the place, but this was one of their important centers. And within a few steps of Herbet Qumran, there are these caves where we find these scrolls that apparently were stashed around the year AD 68. during the war. Middle of the Jewish War. And the thought is that the Romans were getting too close. They wanted to protect this library from being burned by the Romans, let's say. So they took it. They had them put the scrolls in jars and they hid them in these caves.
And it worked.
And it worked because they were there to be found around 1945.
Okay, so the base, what would their life have been like then? Do they marry? Do they not marry? Are they, say monastery, it sounds...
Yeah, so there are not many women at Qumran. Mm-hmm. In the cemetery, there's like a couple of women and a few children, but they're not even sure if those are Essenes because they could be Bedouins that got buried there later.
Okay.
According to the sources we have, the literary sources, there was more than one kind of Essene. Some of them remained celibate. Others married. So you could be a member of this movement without having to renounce marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they had some kind of communal property ethic, but we also find records in the Dead Sea Scrolls that refer to people's private property.
Okay.
So it seems kind of like the Christian community in a way, because you have most Christians marry,
yeah,
but
right.
some of them don't, and yeah. they take vows and live a communal life in monasteries.
Right.
Looks kind of like the same thing was going on with the Essenes.
Okay, so if I may, now that you've mentioned that they're in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. and the timing all seems correct, mm-hmm. I come back to that. Would they have interactions with Jesus and with the Christians?
So they may well have had interactions with them. Mm-hmm. And in the mid 20th century, after we found the scrolls, there was a huge problem that happened because the scrolls, scholars don't like to be rushed. And sometimes scholars can get really behind in their work.
Mm-hmm.
And there were tremendous delays getting the Dead Sea Scrolls published. And it wasn't until the 1990s that the Dead Sea Scrolls were finally completely released.
Wow. So that's very recent.
Yeah. And also, the way it happened is fascinating because you had these academic institutions that, like, some of them had copies of photographs of the Dead Sea Scrolls, but they were required by contracts to keep them, you know, not publish them,
yeah.
because they don't have the rights to publish them. But they were preserved for archival reasons. Like if one library burns down, you want somebody else to have this.
Yes, right.
And the scholars who were in charge of the project had these tremendous delays that were, I mean, they published a few of them, but they were just trickling out. And one of the things they published, and there was a lot of criticism about these delays,
yeah.
And there were all kinds of people going crazy saying it's a Vatican conspiracy. They know the scrolls are going to destroy Christianity and stuff like
yeah.
that. So the Vatican is suppressing it, and that's why the scrolls haven't come out.
Was the Vatican involved in this?
Not directly, but there were Catholic scholars who were working on the Dead Sea Scrolls, uh-huh. among other scholars.
Right.
And so one of the things that had been published was a concordance of the Dead Sea Scrolls. A concordance is a book where it lists, if it's a complete concordance or what's called an exhaustive concordance, it lists every word in a book. So if you get an exhaustive concordance of the Bible, it's going to list every word in the Bible and what verse it's found in.
Yeah.
And it typically will show a little snippet of the text on each side of the word. So if you're looking up the word Jesus, you'll see, "And Jesus said to his disciples,"
yeah.
Matthew whatever,
right.
you know? So you get a little snippet of the text on both sides. Well, what happened was by the 1990s, we had computers.
Oh, so somebody...
And what they did was they took the exhaustive concordance of the Dead Sea Scrolls and ran it through a computer to reconstruct the original text of all of them.
Clever.
And then they released that to the public.
Okay.
And once that happened, some of the institutions that had the photographs of the scrolls said, "They're out there now. We may as well publish, even though we don't have clearance."
Right.
And so that's how they finally all got released. And this really shut down a lot of the crazy speculation because now everybody could read the scrolls for themselves. Are there similarities between what we find in the Dead Sea Scrolls and Christian ideas? Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
They, like other Jews, like most other Jews, they believed in the resurrection of the dead. They believed in rewards and punishments in the afterlife. Of course, they believed in God. They believed in the Messiah that was coming. And so there are points of contact. And some people have said maybe there, you know, some of these were significant. Maybe there was some influence, like maybe they influenced John the Baptist, who lived in a similar area.
Oh,
you know, right. And he was a desert guy, too. He's living right. in the same desert as them. Maybe they knew each other. Maybe yeah. they influenced him in some way. They will also note that John practiced baptism and the Essenes practiced ritual washings, too. But you look closer at these parallels and they're not that similar. Mm-hmm. John was baptizing people for sin, and it was seems to have been a kind of one-time thing. You know, you repent of your sins, you go to John in yeah. the desert, he baptizes you, now you're ready to receive the Messiah. Mm-hmm. That's not what was happening with the washings at in the Dead Sea Scroll community. They were washings for like someone gets ritually impure and you need to wash. And yeah. this happens all the time. It's yeah. not a big momentous thing.
Right.
So the parallels are not remotely as close as what people once thought they might be. So the scrolls provide a little bit of context, but not a huge amount. One thing, though, that I'll mention that they do provide is one point of contact is I was at the Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit once, the traveling one, and they had these like things you would to take a tour. They had these devices you'd hold up to your ear and you'd punch in the number of the station you were at the museum. And then you'd hold it up to your ear and listen to a little audio telling you the exhibit you're looking at.
Yeah.
And so I was looking at one of these, and it was a fragment of a scroll, and it's called the Messianic Apocalypse. And it names the exact signs that the Messiah is going to perform when he comes, as like the blind see, the deaf hear. And it's yeah. like, this is straight out of the Gospel of Luke.
Yeah.
It's the same list of signs.
Right.
And so even though Luke is not quoting from the Messianic Apocalypse or vice versa, it does show that there was this idea that there are these certain signs the Messiah is going to do when he comes that the Dead Sea Scroll community was aware of and that Jesus was aware of and
yes.
that got recorded in Luke.
Okay. So that's fascinating. So I guess I want to ask you from a kind of apologetics perspective mm-hmm. at this point, because you having covered the Pharisees and the Sadducees and now the Essenes who have these expectations of the Messiah that look very similar to Christianity. And as you said, there's this geographic kind of proximity with John the Baptist and all that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll get an apologetics challenge, which is, look, Jesus, the Jesus movement, so to speak, mm-hmm. it's just one of a whole bunch of popular movements at that time, borrowing from one another and responding to one another. And I suppose the challenge then, the apologetics challenge is, well, that points to Jesus not really being that unique.
He is unique.
Okay, so that's the challenge.
He's the only one. Well, sure, you got a bunch of these movements. They have different ideas. They have different claims. How do you know which one is right? Well, when the founder of one of them gets resurrected from the dead, that's a good sign this is the right one.
Right, right. Yeah.
So we didn't have that with the Essenes. In fact, the Essenes had a bunch of ideas that clearly were not true. Uh-huh. They were expecting this massive battle between what they called the Sons of Light, which meant them,
yeah.
and the Sons of Darkness, which meant everybody else.
Yeah.
And they thought that they were going to fight and win this war, and they kind of didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a strike against them.
Your prophecies look less appealing when
right.
when they're
yeah.
straight up wrong. Yeah.
Also, the group is fascinating. Now, I mentioned one thing that people have wondered about is where did this group come from? One of the things that's very interesting is when you like read the halakhic letter about here are all the rules you're doing wrong at the temple. Remember how in the Pharisee and Sadducee episodes, we talked about these different legal positions that the two groups would have. And we talked about how the ruling high priest, like Jonathan Maccabee, kind of went back and forth
yeah.
between favoring the Pharisees and favoring the Sadducees. Well, when you read the halakhic letter, it cites positions as ones that the Qumran community favors that are the same as the positions of the Sadducees. So like you remember the, if you're pouring the liquid from one container into another container and it turns out the lower container is polluted, does that mean the upper container becomes polluted?
Yeah.
So does the impurity travel up the stream of liquid? Well, like the Sadducees, the Essenes said it does. And so it seems that maybe as part of the reason the sect got founded was you had these high priests going back and forth between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And when they started favoring Pharisee positions, that led some of the Sadducees to become disaffected and break communion with the temple.
Right.
And that led to the Dead Sea Scroll community. So it may have been Sadducee priests who were some of the founders or very influential figures early on in the history of the Dead Sea Scroll community. But you'll also notice the Sadducees did believe in things like the resurrection and the afterlife. So
The Essenes did,
but the Sadducees did not.
Did not, right.
So they're clearly not the same movement. But that could be evidence that the Sadducee disbelief in this is recent, that maybe it happened after that idea started to spread among the Sadducees after the Dead Sea Scroll split. Or it could mean that maybe you had some ordinary Jews who did believe in the resurrection, but also agreed with the Sadducee ritual positions.
Yeah.
But there seems to be some kind of Sadducee and broader Jewish influence on the Essene community.
I also listening to you to describe all three groups, you get a sense of a very intense and kind of roiling religious environment, that one that involved an expectation for a Messiah. So
and there were different understandings of the Messiah. Some people thought there would be like two Messiahs, that there was going to be a Davidic Messiah and a priestly Messiah. The Essenes also thought the temple was going to be destroyed because it was impure.
It turned out to be right about that.
Yeah. They thought God was going to build a new temple, maybe through them. They were really hardcore. They uniformly heap scorn on everybody who's not them. And they refer to the Pharisees, for example, as the seekers after smooth things.
What does that mean?
They're a bunch of wimps.
Really?
They're not really strict about following God's law.
Wow.
Yeah. Among their criticisms of the temple complex in Jerusalem. So, you know how, as Christians, we have certain feasts that are movable, like Easter.
Yeah,
you know, it's
right.
A movable feast. It occurs on different days, which is why in Doctor Who, the doctor says he can never find it. You had an issue on the Jewish calendar. They don't have things that are movable in the way our feasts are movable, but they would have some movability if, like, an important feast was falling in the wrong position in the week relative to the Sabbath.
Okay.
You could move the feast, like, one day over. And the Essenes hated that. They thought moving the feast is not pure enough.
Yeah.
Also, and this is perhaps the most amazing thing, certainly the most amazing rule I've encountered, and they had all these rules. You break them and you go on probation and you don't get to eat the holy food until you're done your penance and stuff. But the most surprising rule to a lot of people is no pooping on the Sabbath. So no pooping on the Sabbath.
You better be careful what you eat.
Well, I know. I assume that means they were fasting on the day of preparation and probably eating a high fiber diet the day before that. So the day of preparation meant preparing in an extra sense for them.
Oh, man. It was worth doing these three conversations just for that.
Yeah. Also, don't poop outdoors under the sun.
All right, if I'm in a scene.
Yeah. But
well,
they would, when they you joined the movement, they gave you your own special hatchet that you could use to cover up excrement.
They were very
thoughtful in that regard.
They were scatological, not eschatological.
Well, they were both, actually.
They were both. They mixed scatology with their eschatology. Jimmy, thanks very much. Fascinating stuff. And thanks to everybody who's joined us here on Catholic Answers Focus. Don't forget,
It really helps us if you give us those 5 stars over at Apple, where you get your podcasts, and share it with other people. Maybe let them know they can go to CatholicAnswersFocus.com and find out all about us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Focus.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... A few minutes each day can change your life during Lent. Ave Maria Press offers booklets for daily devotion, reflection, and more from such best-selling authors as Gary Zemak, Greg Kandra, Father Michael White, and Tom Corcoran, and so many more. Looking for Stations of the Cross booklets or books that are perfect for small groups? We have those too. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LENT20 to get 20% off your order today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.